technology side sorted out, I'll get started a little bit. Today's hearing is to receive public comment on phase one of the omnibus habitat amendment that will attach to all fishery management plans under the jurisdiction of the New England Council, including the jointly managed monkfish plan. There are four major components of the phase one of the habitat amendment, which is what we're seeking comment on tonight. First is the new essential fish habitat designations for all managed species, and the public hearing document includes a very handy table which includes all of the preferred alternatives that the Habitat Committee and the full council have approved for consideration. It's a table that I find very handy, and hope that everyone will use the public hearing document that was distributed, and under tab 7, it's document number 2, and is available for the public as well. The table with the preferred alternatives for the new EFH designations is on page 32 and 33. So that's the first portion of phase one. The second portion of phase one of the habitat amendment is proposals for habitat areas of particular concern. There are several proposals. The committee and the council did not select preferred alternatives for these. The third element is the prey species section of the amendment, and then lastly, non-fishing impacts, which are documented in the phase one draft habitat amendment that we're seeking comment on. So that's what we're here for. Leslie Ann is going to provide an overview of where we are, and then after that, we'll receive comments. We won't be able to guess what the council is going to do as final measures in this phase one, but if there are questions about just clarification questions, those can be answered, but questions about what direction the council is going to go. I think we did a pretty good job as far as tipping our hand with respect to the preferred alternatives for the new habitat designation. So that should give people a good idea about the direction that the council is leaning. And with that, I will hand it over to Leslie Ann to provide a brief presentation, and then we'll go to the public comment portion of the hearing.
Perfect timing. Thanks. Before I start, the document itself is on the table, the public comment table right here. There's two volumes to it. The white binder is the main DSEIS, the main amendment document, and the black binder are the appendices. It's about 2,400 pages, and I calculated if we're amending 7 FMPs at 300 pages per EIS, I'm about right on the money. So there's a sign-in sheet. If you would like to sign in, please do so, so we have a record of who's part of the public comment, public hearing. There are also three documents up there. The document with the gray cover is the actual public hearing document. It essentially boils down the 2,400 pages into 30-some-odd pages. There are two other documents up there. There's a document that is the EFH designation alternatives, the status quo designation alternatives versus the preferred alternatives. So instead of having to flip through the 2,400 pages to see what is and what may be, it's in here. And the last document up there are just the maps of the HAPC, or the Habitat Area Particular Concern alternatives, so you can not have to suffer through the section to find it. The maps are right here. Okay. With that said, I'm just going to give you a sort of a brief synopsis of the document. It's based on the questions that are outlined in the public hearing document. The first question, obviously, is what is the Essential Fish Habitat Omnibus Amendment? The amendment is actually a set of proposed changes to the EFH components of the fishery management plans. under jurisdiction of the New England Fishery Management Council. The council manages fisheries that include 27 species. One of these species, which is monkfish, is managed jointly with the Mid-Atlantic Council, and they have actually approved this document for public hearing as well relative to the monkfish sections. Just to reiterate, these are the 27 species for which this council currently has in its fishery management units within our fishery management plans. There's a star next to monkfish because it's managed jointly by us, New England Council being the lead and the Mid-Atlantic Council. Why is the council developing this omnibus amendment? There are two main reasons. One is to meet the National Marine Fisheries Service's published guidelines for implementation of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And that act provides provisions to review and revise the EFH components of all of our fishery management plans every 5 years. I should say at least every 5 years. And also to develop a comprehensive EFH management plan that will successfully minimize adverse effects of fishing on EFH through actions that will apply to all council-managed FMPs. Just to back up slightly, the reason why we call it an omnibus amendment, for those of you who haven't been following this process, is because this one document amends all of our fishery management plans. So, for instance, this document is Amendment 14 to groundfish. It's Amendment 14 to scallops, Amendment 3 to herring, Amendment 4 to monkfish, Amendment 1 to red crab, Amendment 2 to skates, and Amendment 3 to Atlantic salmon FMP. So that's why we call it an omnibus amendment, because we actually modify all of the plans in one action. Why is the action split up into two phases? The council split the action into two phases, phase one and phase two, each with different goals and objectives in order to enhance public clarity and also because of the management complexities associated with doing this action in one big action. Right now, we are asking for comments on phase one of this action. So the document that's right in front of you is phase one of the EFH Omnibus Amendment. The council is seeking comments on phase one topics only at this time. The management alternatives included therein and the analysis that's within the document as well. What are the goals of phase one? Phase one seeks to redefine, refine, or update the identification and description of all EFH for those species of finfish mollusks managed by the council, including the consideration of habitat areas of particular concern. It also identifies, reviews, and updates the major non-fishing activities that may adversely affect EFH. And it also reviews and updates the prey species information for each species within the fishery management unit. There are management alternatives in this document. Those management alternatives are in two sections separately. There are alternatives for essential fish habitat designations, and there are also alternatives for habitat area particular concern, or HAPC, designations. No management alternatives are required for the prey species or non-fishing impact sections. Those sections are actually just descriptive. What is the no-action alternative? The no-action alternative is required for consideration by the National Environmental Policy Act, otherwise known as NEPA. It provides a benchmark enabling decision-makers to compare the magnitude of environmental impacts of other alternatives under consideration. The no-action alternative is a viable alternative that the council could ultimately select if adequate justification is provided. What is a preferred alternative? A preferred alternative reflects the council's favored approach at this time. It was chosen by the council based on the information and analyses contained within the Phase 1 document. In this particular case, preferred alternatives are stated for most life stages and species of EFH in the designation alternatives. And in the EFH designation alternative subdocument under Section 1, there is a preferred alternative table, so you can summarize what the preferred alternatives are. We designate essential fish habitat for each species. There's 27 of them, and also each life stage of each species. And in most cases, there's four life stages, eggs, larvae, juveniles, and adults. The council has selected preferred alternatives for each species and each life stage in almost every case. There are no preferred alternatives declared at this time for HAPCs, which is what Sally had mentioned to you just a minute ago. The council decided to put all of the HAPC alternatives out to the public with no designation of any of them being preferred at this time. EFH designation alternatives must consider and include the following components. They must describe and identify EFH clearly in text that states the habitats or habitat types determined to be EFH for each life stage of each managed species. They must explain the physical, biological, and chemical characteristics of EFH, if known, and how these characteristics influence the use of EFH by species and life stages. They must identify the geographic location or extent of the habitats described as EFH. FMPs must include maps of the geographic locations of EFH or the geographic boundaries within which EFH for each species and life stage is found. And you will notice in the document that there's not only EFH text descriptions, but there are corresponding maps to represent those text descriptions, and there are about 600 maps in the document. The Council reviewed and refined the current EFH designations for egg, larval, juvenile, and adult life stages of all 27 species where appropriate. Some species don't have a larval life stage, for instance, therefore there's no description of that EFH. They did this by means of four main designation alternatives and two other minor alternatives. Each designation alternative includes a text description and a map showing the geographic area within which EFH is defined. With respect to HAPCs, or habitat area particular concerns, the Council is required to identify specific habitat types. I shouldn't say required to identify. They're required to consider the identification of specific habitat types or areas within EFH as HAPCs based on one or more of the following considerations. These are what we call, in layman's terms, the HAPC criteria. There are four of them written into the law. The importance of historic or current ecological function, sensitivity to anthropogenic stresses, extent of current or future development stresses, and the rarity of the habitat type. In addition to addressing these criteria, the Council encouraged the development of HAPC proposals that had Council preferences as well, and these are in no particular alternative. They encouraged ideas that would improve fisheries management in the EEZ, to include alternatives that include EFH designations for more than one council-managed species in order to maximize the benefit of the designation, to include juvenile cod EFH, and or to meet more than one of the EFH final rule criteria, which were I just listed above. The purpose of the HAPCs is to identify those areas that are known to be important to species which are in need of additional levels of protection from adverse impacts. There are also those habitats that are at greater risk to impacts, either individual or cumulative impacts, including impacts from fishing, and they may be appropriate for this classification. The Council has developed 9 major HAPC alternatives, of which many contain sub-alternatives. The Council developed a prey species section. This section describes the major prey species for each FMP and each fishery management unit species under its jurisdiction. There are also maps of the major prey species. The principal prey species are identified also in the descriptions of the EFH alternatives. So, for instance, when we developed the prey species section, where we knew that there are particular major prey species types, we included those in the EFH text descriptions as well. The document also contains a non-fishing impact section. It includes a detailed evaluation of the potential impacts of non-fishing activities. It has many purposes. It identifies human activities that may adversely impact EFH. These are non-fishing impacts. It reviews and characterizes existing information regarding human-induced impacts to EFH. It provides BMPs, or best management practices, and conservation measures that can be implemented for specific types of activities which avoid or minimize adverse impacts to EFH. For instance, there are recommendations in the document for how you could minimize impacts of a dredging project, and there are different recommendations in the document how you would minimize impacts of a pipeline project, for instance. The document also provides a comprehensive reference for use by federal and state marine resource managers, permitting agencies, professionals engaged in marine habitat assessment activities, the regulated community, and the public to ensure that the best scientific information is available for making sound decisions with respect to project planning, environmental assessment, and permitting. This is actually a section that's really important because it may be lost on some of you, but the Council is responsible for designating EFH. That EFH is used by all different types of federal agencies when they go to permit different types of projects. And when they go to permit different types of projects, will it be LNG terminals, wind farms, dredging, dock installation, whatever, they need to conduct an EFH assessment or the assessment of how that project may adversely impact EFH, the EFH for which this Council designates. So the designation of EFH has far-reaching implications beyond the Council. What are the expected impacts of the management alternatives? You have to note that these are EFH designation alternatives. They're also HAPC designation alternatives, which means there are no management restrictions associated with them, other than pointing out that this place and this space and this time under these conditions are EFH, or this area is considered an area that has special interest and is considered an HAPC. Phase one does not create any management regulations associated with these designations or HAPCs. However, it's important to know that the designations of both EFH and HAPCs may in the future through phase two of this action or subsequent fishery management actions be used to develop measures to minimize impacts of EFH, such as the creation of fully closed areas, areas closed to particular gears at particular times of year, or other regulations. And although councils have no authority to regulate non-fishing activities, protection afforded to EFH through future management measures that are designed to reduce fishing impacts could help mitigate the impacts associated with non-fishing activities. What else is in phase one? There's a significant amount of background information. We describe extensively the biological and physical environment of the Northeast ecosystem. We describe protected resources in the system. And our system, in this case of EFH, runs through the range of our species. We manage our species throughout their range, which means that with respect to EFH, the range is from the Hague Line south to the North Carolina-South Carolina border. It also contains a significant amount of descriptive information on regional fishery economics and also regional fishery social and community descriptions. This is probably the first time and probably the most comprehensive description of these types of environments, because we're not restricted to one fishery. We're looking at all fisheries that we manage across all the space that those species range. How can you provide public comments? In person at this public hearing, in writing by mail — this information is also in the public hearing document — in writing by fax, or in writing by email. And all of the information about how you do that is included in the public hearing document. What if I have questions on the document? This document was actually written and developed by the New England Fishery Management Council through its Habitat Committee, its Habitat Advisory Panel, and its Habitat Plan Development Team. Therefore, individual questions in the document should be directed to the council, in this case, me. So if you would like to ask questions about the document at some point, I'll give you my email address. So, when does the public comment period end? It started on April 6th. It ends on May 21st at 5 o'clock, and formal public comments will be accepted during this period. What happens to my comments? Your comments are very important to the council. All your comments will be reviewed and summarized by the council. The comments will be considered then by council bodies prior to final decisions. Those bodies include the Habitat Committee, the Habitat Plan Development Team, the Habitat Advisory Panel, and also the full council. What's the timeline for the amendment? The comments will be reviewed and considered by the council and its various bodies after the comment period closes on May 21st. The council will vote on final measures of phase one at their June 19th to 21st council meeting in Portland, Maine. And then the council will take a deep breath there, move on to phase two of the amendment. And we will take public comments again on the combined phase one, phase two document once that phase two document has been completed. It's important to understand that this is phase one of the amendment. There will be a phase two, but it's one action. So all the phase one decisions will be rolled into phase two, and you'll be able, as a public, to comment again on phase one issues back at the end of phase two. And that's all I have. So at this time, Sally, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thanks, Leslie Ann. At this time, I'd open up the floor to public comment. If you have a comment to make, please raise your hand, and I'll recognize you. You can come up to the microphone, and so we get everything clearly for the record. If you could state your name and make your comments. Yes. Vito.
Thank you very much. Appreciate this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Vito Calamo, and I've been a fisherman for a long time, I guess. This is quite a document, to say the least. And you cover a large area. And my comments are, we seem to be concentrating a lot on fishing of one sort or another, either scallop dredges or drag them in. But I think a major concern that I have at this time is the LNG tankers, they're going to build a pipeline in a very lucrative fishing ground, namely Block 125 off the Gloucester, Massachusetts. And I have a major concern of that area where they're going to discharge very hot water into that area. And between the pipeline dredging and the hot water being discharged in that area, I'm wondering what's going to happen to that essential fish habitat where my family and families before mine have been fishing for about approximately 400 years. And that's a major concern. That's one. The second one is the destruction of fish habitat with these wind farms off of our coast at the southern end of Massachusetts, namely Hyannis, where you could see these wind farms in federal waters. I would say you're going to have more destruction there than you've had in a northeast gale that comes and goes. And the last one I have, to bring it to the record of a major concern by me and other people in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is this beach nourishment, where they're going to take gravel from a known habitat that is used for a spawning area for codfish and other species, such as flounder, but mainly codfish that we've been protecting for years by the State Fisheries Commission. And I'm just trying to figure where our concentration is going to be. I think some of these other forms of destruction should have a high credence on your priority list. And I appreciate this opportunity to speak. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dan?
Well, I haven't digested all, a couple thousand pages yet. But I just have one or two questions. Earlier today, there was some discussions having to do with closed area one and trying to address the sliver. Can you give me any help? First thing, looking at this document, it looks like phase one does not address that at all. Is that correct? So the idea of adjusting the sliver, as one example, that would be addressed in phase two. Do we have any idea just in terms of, so phase two would address everything. What is the time frame for the implementation of that? You know, when would phase two happen?
The timeline for phase one and phase two was in the council binders, and I can actually, it's probably not there. Yeah, June 09 is final implementation of the habitat amendment in total, phase one and phase two, including consideration of the habitat, existing habitat, closed areas and new ones.
Yeah, it's a shame, but I just want to point out that the impact means in terms of the sliver and closed area one will not be able to be factored into the harvest of scallops until at least 2010 and 11. Okay. The second thing, and just this is I just noticed only one thing just in my first glance through the document. It's a shame that we weren't able to update. It appears in all of the introductions of all the species you refer to the status of the fisheries in 1997. I believe there's been updates in the past 10 years, and a number of the stocks since then have been, example, it refers here to scallops being overfished. And I'm sure in 1997 we were still deemed that. Since that time, we've actually deemed to be not overfished. It's a shame we couldn't use maybe more updated data so that the public wouldn't believe that, you know, when we have more current good news, we should probably use it. So I'm trying to put out. I'm just looking at page 47, but I noticed in all of them you're referring to status of the fisheries in 1997. Is that okay as a comment? If I'm misinterpreting something, I apologize.
I assume you're looking at the status quo scallop EFH description?
Yes.
That was what the status quo was back in 1998. That's alternative one. That's the no action alternative. So what you need to do is look at the other alternatives, which are all updated information.
And where would I find them?
There are alternatives 2, 3, 4 in the document. The only thing that you have in front of you in that smaller document is what the no-action alternative is for Scala BFH. In particular, you're talking about Scala BFH. And what the preferred alternative is, which is, should be.
It's also oh,
alternative 5.
It's not in the small document, then.
It is in the small document.
Where in the small document?
On page 50.
Okay, again, it's not critical. Just again, I'm not seeing anything here that updates says that we're not overfished. Page 47 says we were. But it's okay. It's not that critical of a thing. We know we're not right now. Thank you.
If I could just to clarify that alternative one is the no action alternative that was implemented. It's the original habitat amendment that was implemented in 1998. And for most of the fisheries, I don't have that document here in front of me, but most of them were updated through at least 2004, if not with information even more recent than that. And Dave, I don't know if you can confirm that and maybe provide specifics on the Scala.
Well, what we should have done and will do at some point is change the verb tense in that paragraph. They were considered overfished in 1998. They're no longer.
I should have looked. I want to apologize to everybody here because I should have been much more familiar with this since I should have been studying this all along. But unfortunately, I apologize. So, and again, just reading this, just using scalps as an example, on page 40, on page 50, what I'd be interpreting is that the preferred alternative is what's stated on page 50. And the maps reflective of that are on page 51.
Right.
And for each species, I would look at it that way. So, okay.
Right.
Just making sure I was reading things correctly. Thank you.
John Williamson.
John Williamson for the Ocean Conservancy, and I'd like to start off just by offering my compliments to the committee, the tech team, the habitat advisors, and especially to Leslie Ann for putting together a very clear and easy-to-read document, very complete document. Should be serve as a very good foundation for going on to the next phase. We intend to be submitting much more detailed comments on the full document in written form, but tonight I'd just like to speak to the various management alternatives that are in this. I first want to say we agree with all of the preferred EFH designations as they're preferred by the council, including the proposals for alternative one life stages for the salmon EFH designation. Then going on to the HAPC proposal alternatives, we find that all of these alternatives collectively represent a very diverse range of habitat types and conditions that will offer an excellent opportunity to shape a comprehensive approach to habitat management under Phase 2. We would like to see Alternative 2, HAPC Alternative 2, Option B, go forward as being more inclusive than option 2A, and that we think that this is warranted by the science. We find that there is sufficient evidence to include all of the canyon alternatives 3A through 3O. We would like to see alternative 6, option C, become the focus of management under phase 2. And that is the alternative that includes all of the Western Gulf main closure and all of the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary. In that regard, Ben Haskell, a staff person for the sanctuary, was not able to be here tonight, but he asked me to convey that they will be submitting extensive written comments on that alternative, and that they see that they regard this HAPC designation to offer an excellent opportunity to dovetail the sanctuary's planning process with the council's planning on habitat. And they will, so their comments will be reflecting that overlap of jurisdiction and process. Finally, we feel that there is strong reason to adopt alternative 7, option 2, that the young of the year groundfish frequent habitats as deep as 20 meter and deeper, and that so that option 2 better includes those habitats. And so that's all I have to say tonight. Thank you.
Ron Smallwitz.
Thank you. Ron Smallwitz for the Fishery Survival Fund. We're, of course, going to be submitting more detailed comments. I just want to talk a little bit about the HAPCs. As you are aware, I've been involved with this process for a long time, and one of the things I argued is that the choice of HAPCs is more of a phase 2. It's a management decision. If, in fact, they remain in phase 1, they need to be based on hard science. One of the indications that they're not based on hard science is the boundaries are straight lines as opposed to following contours. The other indication is when you go through the data, you'll find out that, in fact, a lot of the justification, the evidence does not exist. I want to emphasize that precaution is not something that should be utilized in choosing an HAPC in phase 1. Precaution is a concept that's a management concept. It's not hard science. As far as the canyon HAPCs, I just want to say I've done a lot of work out in deep water. While science is concentrated in the canyons, there's a lot that happens between the canyons. And we do not have the solid science to determine where vertical epifauna is out in the deep water, the different types of habitat that exist out there. It's just basically an unknown area, and it would be premature to start defining HAPCs out there. A more important step might be to define research areas, which the council has left as a phase 2 option. So I would say that there is no information right now that would justify any HAPCs, I hope the council really looks at the scientific data. If you look at the maps that are presented, you'll see there's a lot of stations wherever they were sampled outside the canyons. They came up with important types of biota. I want to concentrate on two areas. One is the northern edge. We've had an HAPC out there now for 12 years. There has been no evidence whatsoever that HAPC has done anything for cod. I would say that the evidence would actually say that whatever is happening is been negative. I believe it's transferred fishing effort into the inshore areas, which are much more vital for cod. When you look at the maps out there, the hard boulder type of bottom is about a quarter of a mile wide. The vast part of that area, according to SMAS sampling, 97% of the area out there is the granule pebble and sand mixed with sand type of bottom. It's also a very high energy environment, and impact studies, before and after studies by SMAS published in the peer-reviewed literature, indicate that In fact, the effects of fishing compared to fish versus controls are minimal, if any. And that the fact that this area is a high energy area, mostly sand, there's probably no threat due to fishing. And on that small hard bottom area, it's just too difficult to fish, and it's not fished. Other information that has come in over time is that, in fact, the biomass is increased out there, but the biomass is scallops. There is no evidence of soft corals in that area, and that it's not a rare environment compared to the rest of Georgia's Bank. So there's really no justification for that HAPC to remain. The council needs to examine the negative impacts of having such a valuable area to the scallop fishery and ground fishery closed for no reason, and certainly the impact of transferring effort into potentially more valuable types of habitats. My concern for the Great South Channel areas is similar. We do not have hard data on what is the most critical type of habitats there. It's certainly not rare. They cover vast amounts of the area. They're high-energy environments. Again, SMAS studies in that area before and after with the scallop dredges indicate no impacts of any significance between controlled areas and fished areas. A lot of it has to do with our strategy of special access areas and concentrating high CPU effort onto the sand and gravel bottoms that the scallops occur. If you actually look at the maps and charts of the biota, you would find that the highest levels of things like stalk tunicates are in areas that the vessel monitoring systems would indicate the highest fishing effort. And the reason for that is the issue I have mentioned before is that we're binning the data into too large a bin to see, in fact, that fishing is separated from the hard important types of boulder cobble bottom. The gear just does not fish those areas. They are, in fact, refugia, and that they're spaced in sort of a checkerboard fashion throughout the channel area. Any attempt to close these areas will, in fact, shift fishing effort to areas that probably have remained unfished for decades, and the impact of that could be substantial. The one area that probably has great importance for larval cod and earlier, you know, newly settled juvenile cod are and that's been demonstrated by science, is the concept of the 0 to 20 meters. One of the important things I think the council needs to understand, though, is what are the threats? And in that particular area, the threat might not be fishing. The threat might be water quality. And I think it's very important for whenever the council decides what it's going to create into an HAPC, it needs to accurately identify the potential threat. So, again, there are a lot of rare habitats, but we have not identified them accurately. We have not drawn boundaries around them. I think we'll have the capability to do that in 2 years. And it would be a great mistake to act prematurely. And I think we've already made that mistake in the habitat closures that we have now in the groundfish closed areas, closed area 1, Nantucket Lightship area, and everything above 4130 in closed area 2. These are mostly sand, gravel types of habitat. They're areas that now have dense scallop concentrations, for example, dense haddock concentrations, and fishing could be concentrated in those areas with minimum bottom contact compared to areas outside. So I think we made a mistake making those habitat areas, and they need to be revisited for sure in phase 2. We should not make the mistake again and start closing areas that we're not very familiar with and cannot accurately define, especially when the scientific evidence now is coming in that, in fact, we're not impacting them in the way that we fish with low frequency and intensity due to our management strategy. A lot of the information that was used early on to to identify the impacts of fisheries do not come from the temperate climates. They come from other areas. Now that we have a half a dozen studies in our area of impacts, none of them have indicated any significant long-term impact due to our fishing in our areas. So I really would strongly suggest that it's premature to start defining HAPCs at this point in time, and that we need to eliminate the existing ones that we've created without accurate knowledge and certainly no demonstration of any positive benefits. Thank you.
Kip Brogan.
Thanks very much, Kip Brogan with Oceana. I don't know if anybody's tried to print anything in this hotel, but it's about $4 to print two pages, so I'll do it off the computer. I'd like to thank Leslie Ann and the PDT and the committee for everything they've done on this process so far. I think it's a solid document and lays out some good alternatives, how we can move forward into phase two, which by the schedule is now looking at 2009. So we've only begun this process, but this is a good foundation, as John Williamson said. The first thing is that the council early on in this process separated designation from management, and I'd like everyone to keep that in mind. As the public hearing process goes on, public comments go on, and any arguments come along that say that any HAPC means that it's going to be a closure of any kind, that hasn't been decided yet. And with some of these HAPC alternatives, it's just not practical. Some of them are so large, specifically the one in the Great South Channel, that it just couldn't be an outright closure. So I'd like everyone to just make sure that that distinction is in their mind. I'd also like all of the council members to evaluate these alternatives based on the criteria that are laid out. Many of the criteria, one of the most useful things in the whole document is the matrix that Leslie Ann laid out and addressing each of the criteria for each of the alternatives and evaluate them based on those merits and not what this possibly could mean down the line. We should be holding each one up to that set of measurements and nothing else. Oceana supports the full range of the new HAPCs that are laid out, numbers 2 through 8. I believe that it presents a good range of alternatives. It goes from near shore all the way to the end of the EEZ. It does zones. It does features. Looking at Cache's Ledge, at the seamounts, at the individual canyons, but it also protects areas, the Great South Channel and things like that. And I think that it lays out a very good set of HAPCs that can be held up against the HAPCs from any other region in the country. The current HAPCs, alternatives 1A and 1B, those both have merit and should be kept in place. They're doing good work. The Symposium for the Gulf of Maine closure presented some information about what the closure at the northeast peak is doing for larval transport on Georgia's Bank. It was pretty compelling evidence. If you weren't at that conference, the northeast peak is doing some great stuff to seed most of Georgia's Bank. So I hope that gets considered as we go along and look at anything to revoke that closure. As far as the corals go, the canyons and the seamounts. One of the things that when we were talking about the Magnuson reauthorization that went on for most of the day yesterday, one of the most interesting things that's in the reauthorized Magnuson Act is the specific language on coral. One of the stumbling blocks that the PDT and the committee ran into when looking at the seamounts was that there was an EFH on the deepest seamount. And for that reason, it was lopped off and we got an alternative that included two seamounts. The new Magnuson Act is very clear and gives the authority to the councils to protect corals as long as those areas have been mapped and the council has considered the long-term sustainable use of those areas. So I think that gives the council the tools to protect the seamounts and protect the corals in the canyons. So I'd like that just folks to keep that one in mind. It's section 303.2B of the Magnuson Act. As far as looking at the canyons, we support all of the alternatives with the exception of the individual canyons that are encompassed by the larger areas that came out in the committee process. We believe that using the larger polygons that encompass Oceanographer, Lydonia, and Gilbert Canyon in the north and Thompson-Hendrickson Canyon in the south is a much more appropriate way to capture those inter-canyon areas that Ron was alluding to. As far as the Great South Channel, that's a very large, very imposing HAPC proposal. And I know there's going to be a lot of opposition to that one. Designating that area that has been recognized as an important nursery for cod, juvenile cod, is something that really needs to get the full attention of the council as we move forward. Cod is continuing to be in a bad shape, and anything we can do to protect those nursery areas, designate them as something that's important, is a great step forward. One of the things that Vito was talking about as far as the development, the LNG and the beach renourishment and things like that, as those processes go along, if an area is designated as an HAPC, when the National Marine Fisheries Service is asked for a consultation for those areas, say the area near Stellwagen or the area from 0 to 20 meters, if that's a proposed borrow site for those areas, it will have much more weight as the Army Corps of Engineers asks for a consultation. So that's something that this process can improve upon. So each of these HAPCs has great merit. I hope you'll support them all. As far as the prey species go, we've just finished Amendment 1 to the Herring Amendment. And one of the issues that came up during that was the value of prey species as EFH. And the EFH final rule is very clear on EFH, that prey species are EFH. This document discusses the prey for the managed species, but doesn't really go into a lot of the effects of fishing and removals on those and their value as EFH. Herring as prey for cod, for example. And I hope that as we go through into the management and the precursors to the management phase, the determination of adverse impacts and the gear effects evaluation, that it will get a good look at the role of the prey species in the ecosystem. And, for instance, answering the question of how many herring do we need to leave in the ocean, use the diets and the diet compositions of all of the predators, and make sure that when we're budgeting the prey species that we keep enough fish in the ocean to keep those fish up and growing. We'll be submitting much more detailed comments as it goes along, but thanks very much.
Peter Oster.
Okay. Oh, wow. Usually I don't need the okay. I'll stand back so I don't blow my own ears out. My name is Peter Oster. I'm on the faculty at the University of Connecticut, although after my state code of ethics training this afternoon, I do need to point out that I'm here speaking in my own capacity and not for the University of Connecticut. As well, I'm a member of the Council's Habitat Plan Development Team. But I am here today speaking as a member of the public. As a member of the public, I had submitted one of two proposals that proposed designating the original proposal, as I recall, requested designating four seamounts that are within the U.S. EEZ. I've had the privilege and pleasure from 2001 through 2005, where I was part of three separate expeditions to the New England Seamount and Corneri Seamount chains in the North Atlantic. Again, the four westernmost seamounts, or the four Bear, Physalia, Retriever, and Mittellus, are in the U.S. EEZ. We visited both Bear and Retriever and not Physalia, and you can see in Alternative 2, there's a 2A, that includes just Bear and Retriever, from which we actually have empirical information from those seamounts. And then 2B includes Physalia, because it's in the same depth range as Bear and Retriever, and we're just making using the inference to assume that or suggest that Physalia has the same type of environments that both bear and retriever do. What I want to point out here, obviously, I proposed it, so I think this is a brilliant idea. What I want to point out here is the linkage between the designation of deep sea red crab EFH and the CMON HAPC proposal. So we've observed red crab on the peaks of both bear and retriever, and added, and that information was used to develop the EFH preferred alternative, which is 3A in the EFH document. If that isn't passed by the council, then the HAPC proposal becomes unlinked, and then there's no managed species out there. The peaks of these seamounts, bear and retriever, we've observed dense coral and sponge communities. These animals are, as more and more literature is published, that we find that the ages of these animals are hundreds of years old to over a millennia in age. So it meets the HAPC criteria of highly sensitive to disturbance. What I want to do is point out that these proposals are based on recent direct observation from NOAA's Ocean Exploration Program, and the group is producing a number of papers that are making their way through the literature, both in terms of the many new species of corals that are being described. A paper was just accepted in a journal rearranging an entire genus of deep sea corals, and there's many more that are sitting in jars waiting to be described as time goes by, not just from these four, but from across the chain. Action on this HAPC alternative 2 will also provide an example of the concern for seamount ecosystems to the Northwest Atlantic Fishery Organization, which had presently instituted, David, correct me if I'm wrong, since he had not in your head, they instituted a ban on fishing on the seamounts, which they will address, which areas will be opened over the next several years through the council process at NAFO. Yeah, I'm saying all this off that point's off the top of my head, but I'm reasonably confident that there's a ban now on fishing on seamounts on the high seas. Concerned by the New England Council for these types of ecosystems could provide an example to NAFO to stretch into the high seas. I'd also be happy to answer any questions about this, given that this is all new information that's not widely available, if anybody has any.
Peter, one of the things that we wrestle with a lot here is this idea of inference that, you know, because something's over here, it must be over there. Do you have any, I don't want to say hard evidence, but do you have any other cases in this area where the inferences have, you know, subsequently borne fruit, where you you thought something was going to be and then you went and surveyed it in another survey and found it?
Yes. I mean, just in terms of even our dive site selection for Alvin and Hercules when we were diving on the seamounts, we would make a map of the seamount and then predict where we might find coral and sponge communities, and we were pretty good at it. I mean, certainly making the prediction that the peaks of seamounts within these depth ranges harbor dense coral and sponge communities, because they tend to, the highest densities are around the upper slope and peak. Was borne out on each of the seamounts that we visited. The reason that Middleus is not there is that it's much deeper, and we're uncomfortable making that after discussions at the in the PDT forum, that we're uncomfortable being able to strongly infer that would be the case there. So that's why Middleus was dropped off.
So, Peter, one of the questions that we had at the committee meetings were the various naming of the canyons. How did Middleus get named?
Oh, the seamounts?
Seamounts, yeah, I'm sorry. Well,
seamounts have been either named by that's a good question, and I should have a better answer. Seamounts were named for the ship that discovered them. And some were named for people that ran the vessels. I doubt somebody's mother named the Middleist, so I can only assume that it's a ship. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments? Okay. No further comments? Yep. Okay.
My name is Ronnie Schrader. I'm a captain of a sea scalper at Eastern Fisheries. And I'm looking at alternate plan 8 and 5. Is this going to be a seasonal thing, or is it going to be a permanent closure? Are we ever going to get to go back in there if you do close it? I mean, there's going to be a lot of revenue lost, a lot of jobs lost. Infrastructure is going to fall if we're pushed out of those areas. And we're going to have to relocate to different areas to go scalping.
I'm not sure what you're referring to exactly. We're only talking about new EFH designations and habitat area of particular concern designations at this point.
Well, I'm looking at alternate alternate 8, Great South Channel, and alternate 5.
Yeah, Ron, I think that the issue is that we're not doing management of these now. What we're doing is looking at the biological aspects of them and whether they meet the definition of an HAPC. Under phase two, we'll decide after we've designated HAPCs what, if any, management action will be taken in regards to fishing or any other activities there. So right. For right now, all we're doing is looking at the biological aspects of this. Does it meet the qualifications of an HAPC?
So it's got to be researched more? More science has got to be available?
No. It'll be judged on the science that is available now. The council will decide whether or not, and that's why some of these have options. You'll see, like, alternative 6 has 3 options. Is all the habitat rare? Is all... You know, there are a lot of different judgments that will go in here that will ultimately lead the council to a decision as to what to designate as HAPC. In phase two, which will begin after this is completed, the next question will be asked, okay, it's now HAPC. What, if anything, do you want to do with it? And then another set of alternatives will be developed, and the alternatives could be anything from no action, in other words, don't do anything, to close it to some type of gear or close some portion of it to some type of gear. But we don't know what those are even going to be yet. Those will be developed in 2007, 2008, and probably go into public hearing sometime in 2009. So all this is right now is to decide whether or not these areas fit the biological criteria that are necessary for a habitat area of particular concern. They don't have any management connotation whatsoever.
I get you. Okay, I want to talk about the habitat area that's west of Nantucket Lightship. Now, 20 years ago, before I started scalloping, I was a dragoman, and I fished those shoals for codfish all the way up to Rosen Ground, almost right up to the beach of Nantucket. That was where the codfish were back then. Now, I support that area by far. You know, that's a good spot to be closing if you're going to close something. It's like 0 to 20 meters, like Ron said, that'd be a good spot for spawning. We used to catch a lot of scrod in there, and I think that's a good point, you know, to take into consideration. And I think that's about it. Right, thank you.
Yeah, Eddie Welch. I'm concerned with this because it seems that once you guys get an HAPC, the thing never gets opened. As Ronnie said before, that went out on the northern edge. To me, there's no reason for that to be closed. It's no different than any place else out in Georgia's. It's loaded with scallops. You guys want to protect codfish. I've never seen anybody go out there and like quantify the reasons that these places are closed. Now you're talking about this whole big area in the channel. And you guys are saying you're not going to, You're just looking at them to see if they can be protected. But how else would you protect them but close them? And once you guys get them closed, we're done. I mean, you know, you can tell me you're not going to close them, but you know there's no other way to protect them but then to close them. So, I don't know. You guys get something closed, and then it's closed forever. It takes an act of God to get it back open. And I think you got enough closed.
Excuse me, sir.
Then you would support alternative 9, which is the alternative that provides a mechanism for the council to remove or undesignate one or both of the current HAPCs?
Yes, I suppose. I haven't really read it, but okay. I'd like to see them opened again and then talk about closing something else that, you know, might mean more, like inside that 20-fathom edge there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, further comments? I see your hand, Dan. I just wanted to see if anyone else wanted to make a comment first. No? Okay, Dan.
Actually, I just listened to the last two comments. I just had a process question to understand a little better. The areas are currently, as they're designated now, in the next phase of this, will we be able to overlay other filters or thoughts? Example number one is some of, example again, you're still using the one that looks so big in the channel. We now have BMS management, so you can have irregular areas. You can do many things to manage area management other than big blocks. The first time we had big blocks was because we didn't have those tools. Again, not that there's anyone talking about closing all of the South Channel now, but that's just a big rectangle that doesn't correspond to any contours or any specific areas within it. Will, in the next phase, the council be able to look within subsections of those areas, or are you only limited now in those big pieces?
Yeah, my opinion is if we can look at areas in a more refined way, then we will.
And my... So the answer is then we're not limited to those. We can do the subsections, and we're not limited to that.
If there are comments, I mean, that's what we're doing now, is soliciting comments on the areas that are proposed. And if there are specific sub-regions that are of interest or not, then those should be highlighted.
Okay. So I guess I personally am not capable of making the specific areas. Now, I'm just saying that it's clear to me that we should be looking at managing areas very discreetly and using VMSs as a tool. And some of those areas seem to be drawn based upon contours and some not, so that'd be one comment. And my second comment, I guess, is just part of the social filter that we eventually at the council to look at all this in the second level of the process is, you know, clearly we need to have, you know, old growth forest in terms of, you know, terrestrially, so we preserve some areas on land, so we preserve some baseline and biodiversity, and clearly we need to do the same in the ocean. The question is we have to decide how much of that we need, and that's obviously the decision that you're going to be looking at in the future. But the fact of the matter is if we did the same sort of exercise terrestrially, we would say, you know, all of the continent is important for life cycle. The question is then we make choices. So we built this building, and we heated it and cooled it because we chose to do that rather than keep it a field or a natural forest. So it's those same human balances and uses we're going to have to look at. They're not an extreme of all one or the other. It's too complex to make it, you know, look at today, but I don't think we should look at them as black and white. We have to look at that. How do we balance all those activities? Thank you.
Yeah. One of the things I think people need to take away from this document, too, especially if you're going to make further comment, is that under the law, we're required to produce to go to public hearing with the biggest possible area. We can't make it bigger than what it is in the public hearing. We can make it smaller. So the areas that you see are the biggest possible area. And, you know, comments as to why, as an example, an area might be smaller, some of the things you just mentioned, those are the kind of comments that would be very helpful as the council tries to decide what exactly the size and shape of these areas will ultimately end up being. But what you see is the biggest that it can be at this time.
Other comments? Harriet?
Harriet Diedrichson, boat owner, Port of New Bedford. I would like to see the area up at the northern edge open, the one that's supposed to be for codfish, the Collier area. And I would like to see some of the other areas also, 1 and 2, where I'd like to see some of those areas open and try that and see if it can be helpful to both the groundfish fishery, and I believe it would certainly be helpful to the scallop fishery. I know they were closed a long time ago for multi-species and so forth, but as we can see, it hasn't seemed to help because there's more and more cutbacks for the multi-species people. So I would suggest we try something else. I don't think it really needs to be closed with the type of habitat that's there. Thank you.
Further comments? Yes, with the visor, sir.
Better. My name's Justin Long, and I'm looking at this. I wonder where exactly did the size of this area for the codfish in the channel? How did you ever come up with that? The depths. I mean, you're talking about that juvenile cod, 20 fathoms. I think this is way out of line. I think it should be reevaluated before it's even considered by anybody for anything. This is where I fish. 90% of my trips come from right there. So, also the edge. So we got a toe somewhere. We have to be somewhere. And I think the council would be wrong to even consider it. We've been cut down by everything. Our gear, the size of our gear, the amount of men. We've given everything. And I don't even think that these things should even be considered as options. Not now, not down the road, until you guys start giving back to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jim O'Malley. Usually my remarks are better prepared, but a thought has occurred that I haven't fully worked out yet. But I think it's a very different world that we have right now from the one that we had when habitat issues were first being raised. And I think that may lead to a way of thinking that might be more productive in the long run. 10 or 12 years ago, if you had made certain habitat regulatory proposals, they were all perceived as taking something away in terms of fishing opportunity. But I think with the latest Magnuson reauthorization, we may be looking at a slightly different situation, which may make a great change in the way that people look at things. With hard TACs proposed for all fisheries going to be required in one way or another. We won't quibble about how. We may be looking at a situation where the attitude toward a closed area, assuming we are, you know, already thinking about phase two of the amendment, can now be looked at by the industry in a very different way. Will this closure prevent us from achieving OY and from actually catching the TAC? And if not, then perhaps we won't have the kind of objections that we might have had 10, 12, 15 years ago. So I think that creates a real opportunity. And that opportunity comes down to the way we look at priorities. Under normal circumstances, you would say, well, my priority is the thing that's most important to me, and my second priority is the second most important. But perhaps we should begin to look at priorities in terms of practical achievability, which in this case is going to be intensely political. So I think that we could begin to look at things in terms of, first of all, let's try and find a place that we have really good reason to believe is a generator of fish or scallops or whatever it might be. And if there is a clear demonstration that this place needs to be left alone because it is a generator of fish or scallops, then I would expect the political path for regulatory measures to be quite easy, because people on all sides, the regulatory people, government people, academics, environmentalists, and members of the industry would say, yes, that's a great idea. Let's protect this area because we know that it benefits everybody. And there may be then a second level of areas which would be the second political priority in terms of achievability, and that's people, and that's places that people don't care about. Oh, it's too deep. We're never going to go fishing there, and, you know, what do I care? I'd lose all my gear if I ever tried, or anything, and something in terms of the seamounts and the really deep water corals may be another thing that is quite easily achieved for their aesthetic value or for any reason, but you won't get opposition because they don't represent taking anything out of anybody's pocket right now as it is perceived. And I would suggest that the very last place that you propose restrictive regulatory measures would be on those places which are valuable in terms of their known productivity now, and regulatory measures imposed on those places which cost people money will be the ones most hardly and bitterly fought. They will be the most difficult to achieve, they will take the longest, and there will be the greatest number of hard feelings and shed blood over it. So, again, this is not anything that I've put in writing or really even thought that much about, but it does seem to me to make a lot of sense in terms of how we proceed. And I would suggest that thinking in those lines, along those lines, might lead to much more productive actions in the near term, let's say the next 2 or 3, 4 years. And that's about the only thing that I would have to say at this moment, but I'd be interested in further conversations in the corridor or a bar room or wherever as to whether or not that approach seems to make more sense to people. That political priorities may be more important than biological ones in the near term. And I really, looking to my right, I cannot resist this other suggestion that in trying to strike some balance, there's been a fair amount of talk about prey species. But with all due respect, I would also suggest that there may be such a thing as a predator species. And if herring is important to tuna, how do we feel about dogfish and cod? In any event, I would like to see some discussion in those areas, but I wouldn't want my cynical last observation to detract from the earlier one, which I think should generate a little bit more discussion. And I thank you very kindly.
Further comments? Peter?
Peter Oster again. All the same stuff before applies. But I'd like to just add to Mr. O'Malley's comments are that the political nature of the discussion and the human factors in the discussion are what the overarching issues in how the final decisions are made in these types of forums. But one thing that I think would be useful in this process is having some kind of leveling approach to what science we have and what we understand and what we don't. There's been a number of statements about what we understand about closed areas and what works and what doesn't, and I think that there's a because there's not been a forum for those other than perhaps reading through the however many thousand pages here and having to spend some time looking at an LNG terminal proposal on Long Island Sound. I can tell you I didn't look at every one of those pages. and that having some kind of back and forth discussion on what we know about how the Western Gulf of Maine closure works and how we know Area 2 works and Area 1 works and what it does and what it doesn't and what we've looked at and what we've not looked at, having been part of a number of those studies, might be a useful exercise. So as these other discussions about the utility of the closed areas and HAPC designations arise, then everybody's on the same playing field with at least what we understand from an empirical sense. Now, I also realize that the council is busy with a wide number of issues, and timelines are important, and this is wouldn't be a short 30-minute discussion. But I'd just like to put that on the table as, in terms of a comment on how this process evolves. Thank you.
Further comments? Ron.
Hi. This is more of a question. I'm just trying to understand this process. You're saying that if you designate an, let's just take the existing HAPC on the northern edge. If that designation remains, in phase two, are you going to examine, in other words, for example, it has that ridge that runs through it, which I don't think anybody fishes. Most of the value of the northern edge has to do with the oceanography and not the substrate. It has a vast amount of scallops from a habitat standpoint. Because the scallop fishery has restricted catches, it would be much better to allow the fleet to harvest dense quantities of scallops because that would minimize bottom time, minimize bycatch, minimize energy consumption, and all the benefits. Is that going to be weighed? In other words, then would an option exist to say one or two things, either shrink the HAPC to the type of habitat, that boulder section, that has possibly a unique substrate for that area, though, again, I think most of the important characteristics have to do with the oceanography, or can one subdivide the area and allow scallop access seasonally, for example, controlling the frequency and period of harvest, which we've been doing quite successfully, based on the evidence that, like I said, from the SMAS studies, that this pulse fishing of scallops seems to be a very sound way to harvest. I'm just worried that we're not going to be able to have those options because the NEPA process has, once we make an area an HAPC, we might not be able to change those boundaries. So then the question is, are we developing a subset within an HAPC that might have different management strategies? This went back to that, what did we call those levels, 1, 2, 3, and 4, a strategy of low frequency and intensity and seasonal harvest might be appropriate for that edge, that area, as well as closed area 1 and the center of Nantucket Lightship. Are we going to have those options? Are we going to be able to get there from here? Because that's why I wanted HAPCs in phase two, so that we could have an intelligent conversation, because no one in the industry believes that you could protect these, when you define those boundaries, that you have another form of protection other than banning fishing. They don't just trust it. So we're just going to fight it tooth and nail, and we're not going to reach a very good consensus. So I want to be sure that what your plans are for the types of tools that are going to be available once we get out of phase one.
I think year-round closures are one tool. I think there are other tools that we'll be considering, and I wouldn't want to limit it just to year-round closures. Certainly that's something that's still on the table. It's something that council has used in the past, and I would expect would continue to use. But but gear modification, seasonal closures, those would be on the table as well. John?
Also, to the point that Ron raised, I would remind everybody that the HAPC is not why that area is closed. It is closed prior to any establishment of HAPC in that area. It was just an evaluation that when we were doing the first habitat amendment, that area seemed to have habitat that was important to cod, and that was why it was also designated HAPC. There are no management measures that are associated with that HAPC at all. It's closed for other reasons. The whole area was closed. Some of it has been looked at and said, yeah, it's high-energy areas, and modifications were made on a seasonal basis when various groundfish were not present to allow other species to be harvested, primarily scallops. But I think that's the type of analysis what we've pointed out would be done under Phase 2, and I think that's the appropriate way to do it. But again, I would keep in mind that I don't know of any HAPC that's out there that's kept anybody out of doing anything. There are other reasons for people not being in those areas.
Further comments? It's like a Quaker meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. If there are no further comments, then this hearing is adjourned. Thank you very much.